Okay, Boker Tov to everybody. Welcome and good morning. If I could remind people, please, the request of the organisers here to turn off your phones or put them on vibrate, silent, whatever, so that we don't have music from the heavens through the shir. But today is the last of a series of shirim. It stands on its own. But we've taken a few weeks to talk about issues to do with our relations with the non-Jewish world. A bit warm in here. So, and I'd like to speak today about a fascinating topic, which I think is going to introduce some new ideas here that maybe people haven't heard before, maybe people have. Already we had a reference to it. You made a reference last week. And we'll see where we're going from that. I don't need to tell you that this is a special time of year. Chanukah, Be'ezrat Hashem, will be starting next Motzei Shabbos. This Motzei Shabbos coming. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll speak a little bit about Chanukah. We'll talk about Chanukah issues, but that's not really my focus today, although we will mention Chanukah. But of course, we don't live in an isolated world, and most people in this room are from Chutz La'aretz. And if you turn on the radio, the TV, or anything else this time of year, of course, what do you hear? Jingle bells and all other things connected. Because, of course, it's also coming up to Christmas. In case you haven't realized, if living in Israel. We actually listen to quite a bit of internet radio at home, so we get a little bit of English radio, Radio 4, etc. And it's impossible to avoid it. And that's clearly coming up too. But not only that. Because there is a rising interest in today's world in pagan religions, again, which is interesting. My wife actually used to work when we lived in England with a witch, with a Wiccan witch, who was very connected to Wiccan magic. She actually was the head of human resources, which is interesting, because I'm not sure you want to mess with her in that sense. But whatever, she worked with this woman who claimed to be a witch, and for those of you who may not realize, today actually is the solstice. And if you go down for a walk today around Stonehenge, or such places, Stonehenge in England, you will see a lot of druids and pagan-looking people doing all sorts of interesting things for the time of year. So a lot is going on at this time of year, and all of these things are clearly related. And I'd like to talk a little bit today about, I've called it Solstice Surprises, Christmas, 9th of Tevet, and Nippelnacht. Nippelnacht, I'm sure, will be familiar to many people here. What is the 9th of Tevis? What's that got to do with anything? So we will see a little bit about that over the course of Be'ezrat Hashem in the next hour. Let's start with a source which I think you're probably familiar with, which is brought in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Says the Mishnah as follows. Elu Eidehem Shal Oivdei Kachavim. We're familiar a little bit with this now. We've seen it over the past week. The very first Mishnah in the Maseches Avodah Zarah says that 3 days in the run-up to the festivals of pagan religions, we're not allowed to do any business with those pagans. The Gemara talks about the reasons, Lifnei Iver, maybe to not to enable the pagan to thank his God for doing the deal. But what are those festivals? The Gemara now wants to identify what are these festivals that we're not allowed to do business. So it goes through. Calends, which we'll see is the Roman festival of Calends. We'll see what that is. Saturna. And Saturna. So what's Saturna? Clearly named for Saturn. Saturna is another name for Saturnalia. In fact, there are some versions of the Mishnah which actually have the word Saturnalia here. The Tiferet Yisrael points out that some versions changed it from Saturnalia, which was the name of a pagan festival, to Saturna, because they didn't want to mention the name of Saturnalia, which was very infamous to the Jews. Saturna is a play on words. It means the sun, the light has gone away. Okay, it's the shortest day of the year. So what was Saturnalia and Calends? So Saturnalia was a Roman festival. We'll see the 8 days up until the solstice, 8 days up until the 22nd, 23rd of December. And Calends was the 8 days up until the new month. Okay, the beginning of January, because Janus, the Roman god January, the Janus was the one that had two faces, facing forwards and facing back, that's the turn of the year. So we see the Romans had two festivals, one in the run-up to the solstice, 8 days, and one in after the solstice in the run-up to the new month. This basically is our Christmas, New Year season that we have today.
So they were there the first two. The Gemara is going to explain them a little bit more. V'yom genusia, and the day of the genusia of Malchehem, we'll define that in a little bit. V'yom haleda, and the birthday of the king. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanan, Barava, in source number one still, Kalend, what is Kalend? Kalenda. Ches yamim achat kufa. 8 days after the tkufa. The tkufa is just a Hebrew word for the solstice. There are four tkufot in the year. Tkufa tevet is the winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year. Obviously in the northern hemisphere, from Australia, it's flipped, or New Zealand. Then there's Tkufat Nisan, which is the spring equinox, the vernal equinox, which is where the day and the night are the same. Then there's Tkufat Tammuz, which is the summer solstice, even busier down in Stonehenge in Tkufat Tammuz. And then Tkufat Tishrei is the autumn, the autumnal equinox, which again, which is the day and the night the same length. So 8 days after the Tkufa is the festival of Kalends in the lead up to the new month. Saturna, back in the source, Chet Yamim Lifnei Tkufa, like I said before, 8 days before Tkufa. V'simanech, and there is a sign for this, there's a way to remember this, a pasuk in Tehillim, Achor Vakedem Tsaratani. You have afflicted me before and after. They use this pasuk in Tehillim because this was a very, very difficult time for the Jews. There was a lot of persecution of the Jews. We'll get back to that in Nitelnach. The Jews were forced to perform in various different degrading ways in public, run for their lives, etc. These were festivals that the Romans celebrated. Actually, if you look up what the Romans did to celebrate those festivals, I brought at the bottom here from, I did a bit of research, these festivals were accompanied by drinking, buffoonery, sexual license, cross-dressing, singing naked in the streets, giving gifts, and general relaxing of rules and norms. If that sounds familiar to anybody here, then that's been going on for thousands and thousands of years, and that just morphed into the modern-day New Year season. Now, says the Gemara, Lefi Shira Adam Harishon, it brings an original connection, a midrashic idea with Adam Harishon. Adam Harishon saw Yom Shemit'at V'Holechta, the day was Mitma'et, the day was getting shorter and shorter. If Adam Harishon was created Rosh Hashanah time, then he did the Ches in the Gan Eden, and the days are getting shorter and shorter. So Amar, he said, Oily, oh my goodness, this is the end. Shema bishvil shisarachti, because I went off the derech and I ate from the fruit. Olam chashuch ba'adi, the world is becoming dark because of me. V'chozeret o'vavo, and it's returning to its sense of, its state of chaos. V'zohi mita, this is the death, sheniknesa alai min hashamayim. This is what was decreed, this is what it says, when you eat from the fruit you will die. This is it, the world is coming to an end, everything is descending into darkness. So Amad v'yashav ches yamim, look at these words very carefully, there were 8 days that he sat, v'tanit u'b'tfilah, in davening and in fasting, v'kevin shirat, tkufas teves, when he saw the tkufas teves, the winter solstice, v'rayom shem me'arich v'olech, that the days are beginning just to get a little bit lighter again, Amar, he said, ah, min hagashal oylam hu, this is obviously the natural cycle, it's not just because of me, or it's not because of me at all, v'halach v'asa shmoina yamim, Tovim. He made a festival of 8 days. Okay? Says the Gemara, L'shana cheret, in a subsequent years, Asan le'elu ve'elu yamin tovim. He made the days before into a Yom Tov, when he was used to be fasting, and the days after into a Yom Tov also. V'hu kavam l'shem shamayim. Adam Arishan made these into a kosher festival l'shem shamayim, as a way of connecting with God, a classic monotheistic response, that I use these days as a way of deepening my connection with God. But heim, but the Avodah Zorah, kav'um l'shem Avodah Kachavim. They fixed them for Avodah Zorah. And those 8 days became Kalendah and Saturnalia. But they originally had roots, says the Gemara, in monotheism. It's interesting, when you compare that with the Gemara that deals with Hanukkah, they don't directly talk about each other, but the comparisons are unmistakable. Look in number two. This is a very famous account from the Gemara on Shabbos. My Hanukkah. What is Hanukkah? Tana Rabbanan b'chafei b'kislev. On the 25th of Kafei b'kislev, Yom de Hanukkah, Tamnia. There are 8 days of Hanukkah. The loy lemitzvot b'chom, you're not allowed to do a hespedim on them. But the loy lehaitan, you're not allowed to fast on them. Why? K'shenichnesu yavamim leheichal, timu kol hashmanim shebeheichal. When the Greeks went into the temple, they desecrated all the oils. And when the Chashmonaim arose and defeated them, this is all very familiar, only one little jar, that only one jar had the seal, They only had one day of oil, and of course it would take them 8 days to purify new oil, to squeeze and purify new oil from Tumah and Tahara, etc. The Natib on Nais, they found that there was a Nais. The Hidliku Mumenu Shmoina Yamim, there were 8 days. And look at the language. Lashana Acheres, exactly the same language we just saw for Adam Arishan. Kavum, they fixed them, Va'asum Yamim Taibim, Bahalil Bahoida. 8 days fixed in a subsequent year of a Yontif at this time of year. Clearly, Hanukkah also has its roots in some ways in the festival of Adam Arishan, in a celebration of renewal of the idea that the world does not descend into darkness. In the case of Yevanim, the Yevanim are always associated with Choshech, the idea that Psukim at the beginning of Bereishis, where it says, Tohu Vavohu V'Choshech Al Pnei Tahoim, Choshech is the Yevanim, and the idea of the return from darkness to something more positive, light, Kedusha, etc. That's not a discussion for today, that's a discussion for maybe next week, another time, but you see the comparisons between the two are unmistakable. What was the next example? Yom Genusia. So this is where it gets a little bit interesting. If the last bit wasn't already interesting. Look at number three. Yom Genusia Shel Malchayim. Says the Gemara, my Yom Genusia Shel Malchayim. What is this Yom Genusia? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Yom Shema Midim Boy Ovetz Kechavim Et Malkam. It's the day of the coronation. When they established their new monarchy and they put the king on the throne. So the Gemara doesn't like that. Zahatanya, but isn't it taught in the Brisa? Yom Ginusia is one thing, Ve'yom Shema Midim Et Malkam. And then a separate thing is the celebration of the coronation. They're obviously not the same thing. So why have you just identified Yom Ginusia with the coronation? They're two different things. So Gemara says, like Kasha, not a problem. Ha Didei V'ha Dibrei. One is the coronation of the king, and the other one is the coronation of the king's son. Okay? Both days. So the Gemara has a problem with this. Really? Do we see ever a situation where the Romans have a king followed by his son, the king? Don't forget, the Mishnah was written in the time of the Romans. We never find with the Romans that one Caesar is succeeded by his son, the next Caesar. That's not how it worked. The Caesar was elected by the Senate. Half the time they killed the last Caesar and just took over in a coup. When do you ever have a hereditary monarchy in the way that we want to have Ben David and Shlomo, etc., etc.? You don't find that. So, says the Gemara, it can't be that the Romans had hereditary monarchy. And he brings a pasuk from Ovadia that we read in last week's Haftorah. V'hatni bar Yosef, v'tani bar Yosef, Rav Yosef brings down the following. V'hinei katon natatiha bagoyim. I have made you, we're talking about Edom, which of course Chazal associated very strongly with Rome and ultimately with the Christians. I have made you into the smallest of nations. And the Gemara explains, what does that mean? She'ei moshivim melech ben melech. Because they don't even have a hereditary monarchy. They have no continuity. Bazui atama'od, you are very, very degraded, says Avadi about Edom. She'ein lahem loiksav. The loy lashon. They have no ksav and no lashon. They have no language and they have no script. They have no writing. Where did that come from? All of a sudden, Edom is disgraced because they have no script and they have no language. Now it's interesting. What the original, there is no real historical connection from Avadia's time between Rome and Edom. But Chazal associated them very strongly with each other and used these psukim to apply to Rome. And all of a sudden they told us they have no script and no language. Look at Rashi, number four. Rashi opens this up. Ksav lashon. Shel Romai. The script, the letters, and the language of the Romans, mi'uma acheret ba'alahem. They got it from a different nation. Okay, is that true? Well, yes, that is true. The Romans got much of their script from the Greeks, okay, and adapted it into modern Latin script, okay, so they got that from other people. Maybe even the language, Latin, was an adaptation of Etruscan or whatever. They got their things from other people. But then Rashi just adds, apparently gratuitously, Acherim tiknu lahem kol sifrehem. Other people wrote all their books. Other people wrote all their books? First of all, what's that got to do with the Gemara? Other people wrote all their books. The Gemara just says they don't have their own text and they don't have their own language. Didn't say anything about books. Rashi suddenly jumps in, other people wrote all their books. So where's he coming from? What's he commenting on? And secondly, what do you mean other people wrote all their books? We have a plethora of Latin classical literature from the Roman period. Virgil, Horace, Ovid, Juvenal, Pliny, many, many others. Other people wrote all their books. So you'll say, oh, did Rashi know about those things? Okay, let's assume Rashi knew about a lot of things. And he lived in a Christian country where Latin was the lingua franca. Therefore, I assume Rashi knew all about this. So why is he saying other people wrote all their books? So in order to understand this Rashi, we have to open up a sugya which is rarely opened. And I want to draw your attention to some wonderful shirim on this that I heard in an article which I read by Rabbi Schneel Lyman. Rabbi Schneel Lyman, who some of you probably know, is a very, very considerable Talmid Chacham, a major figure, Rosh Hashiva in America, he is also a wonderfully accomplished academic with a background in Harvard, in history, and he has the most enlightening shiurim. I recommend very strongly if you type into your Google search, Lyman Library, L-E-I-M-A-N Library, you will get a bunch of shiurim and articles and various different things, which were written by him, and also on YU Torah you'll find a number of his shiurim. And I'd like to take this opportunity to maybe raise one of the issues that he raises there and connect it a little bit with what we've been talking about. What is going on with this Rashi, and what's it got to do with the time of year? So have a look, please, on page number 2. Page number 2 raises the question of something called Megillat Ta'anit Batra. Now, I would wager that many people in this room have never heard of Megillat Ta'anit Batra. Now, Megillat Ta'anit, the first Megillat Ta'anit, is very famous. What is Megillat Ta'anit? It was, not Esther, actually, after Esther. Megillat Ta'anit was an Aramaic work written in the Second Temple period, which was a list of days on which you are not allowed to fast. It's actually a little bit confusing. It's called Megillat Ta'anit, but it's a list of feast days, not fast days. Because of all the wonderful things that happened to the Jews in the Second Temple period, and all of these were cancelled, because once the Temple was destroyed, we didn't have any of these feast days. There were things like the day that we won over the Kutim, and the Shomronim, and things like that. Only two remain from Megillat Ta'anit, which survived the Churban, which are Chanukah and Purim. Okay, Hanukkah and Purim survived. The rest were cancelled when we went into Golan. That's the original Megillat Ta'anit. But there's another Megillat Ta'anit, which is not related in any way, which is often called Megillat Ta'anit Batra, the later Megillat Ta'anit, which is actually a list of fasts. And we see this brought down in the Bahag. Who was the Bahag? The Bahag was the Baal Halachas Gedolus. He lived in Babel in the 7th, 8th century. And he writes as follows. Number 5, this is quoted from the Torah. Katav Bahag. So the Bahag writes as follows. Elu yamim shemit'ani mahem min ha-Torah. Now that's already an interesting thing. These are days on which you have a Torah obligation to fast. And the Beit Yosef, commenting on the Torah, adds in there. What does it mean min ha-Torah? Afal gav de mitakonis chachamim heim. These are not actually min ha-Torah, these are from the rabbis. They called min ha-Torah, Lima, to tell you, Sheyeshli Yizabahem, Kamoish Vashel Torah. You have to be as careful on these fast days as you are with anything that comes from the Torah itself. List of fast days, as important as the fast days in the Torah. What are these fast days? We'll see in a minute. Zamit Anibahem, and someone who fasts on them, Lo Yochel Behem, Velo Yishteh, you can't eat, and you can't drink, Ad Ha'erev, you have to fast the whole day, says the Bahag. Not just till Chatzos, but you have to fast the whole day. And it gives a whole list of which I've given you a few examples. Echad ben Nisan, on the first of Nisan, Mesu b'nei Aharon, Nadav anavihu, the b'nei Aharon died, everyone has to fast on the first of Nisan. Does anyone here fast on the first of Nisan? The first of Nisan is Rosh Chodesh. Are you allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh? Yeah. Interesting. B'yudbo, on the 10th of Nisan, Mesa Miriam, Miriam died. And we lost the bear. Everyone has to fast on the 10th of Nisan. That is Min HaTorah almost to fast on the 10th. Again, I don't think anyone in this room ever fasted on the 10th of Nisan. Skip forward. I've missed out all of the list apart from I've fast forwarded to Kislev. B'chaf chet b'kislev, Saraf Yehoyakim et Megillah Ashekasa Baruch Mipi Yirmiyah. This, of course, is a story I'm sure you well know, that Yirmiyah was in prison. He was locked up by Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim that we mentioned last week, with the tattoos, okay, if you remember everything connects up. Yirmiyah was locked up in prison, and he dictated a scroll to Baruch ben Neriah, his Talmud, And that scroll was burnt by Yoyakim, therefore everyone has to fast on the 28th of Kislev. Now, the 28th of Kislev today is? You're not allowed to fast on Chanukah. The Ches B'Tevis, on the 8th of Tevis, Hayamasa de Talmai HaMelech, this is more well known, this was the episode of Talmai HaMelech when he translated the Torah into Greek, people have heard of that. Ubertes, and here the most mysterious of all, Ubertesbo, on the 9th of Tevis, Lo Kasu Raboisenu Al Mahu. They said fast, but we're not telling you why. Okay? B'yud, on the 10th of Tevis, oh, now we're on familiar territory. That was the day that the king of Babel approached Yerushalayim to conquer Yerushalayim and besiege Yerushalayim, and that is also a fast day. And that is a day which everybody has heard of. But all of these other days, where do they come from? And what about the 9th of Tevis, where we're told to fast, but we're enigmatically not told why? And what about the fast days on Rosh Chodesh and Chanukah, which are actually halachically prohibited to fast? We'll deal with that all in a few minutes. And he ends here, Ula Asid, Lavoi says the Bahag, and in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Asid, Lahavkam, the Sasson, or the Simcha, God will turn all these fasts to Sasson, the Simcha, the Sivat, it says, Vahafachti, Evlam, the Sasson, Venichamti, Vesimachtim, Migonam, Kain, Yehirat, Son, Dimhera, Vyamenu, Amen. And we can finish the Shir there, because that's the note on which we like to finish here in, but that not solves any of the problem. Because the Bahag just says one day all these fasts will be wiped out, but for now, we all have to fast. Now, the Beit Yosef, who is, of course, commenting on the Torah brought this down. The Torah was writing in the 1300s, bringing this list from the 8th century. So it's an old list. The Beit Yosef, writing in the 1500s, commenting on the Torah, says in number 6, Aval lo ra'iti me'ola, velo shamati mishinahag li'tanod bahem. I've never heard of this. And if you've never heard of it, you're in good company, because he's never heard of it either. Rav Yosef Karo. Ube'emet, he says, sheyesh litzmoa. It's actually very surprising. Our mishi is kain, on the person who made the sense, hech tikkun katsasam leitano, it's barosh chodesh. Chodesh, I don't think you should have it down from the end. How can you fast on Rosh Chodesh? So he says, I don't understand who wrote this list, and I don't understand why it's there, and it's against the halacha, and I've never heard of anyone keeping it. So it's even more of a surprise that when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he included the list. One of the simanim of Shulchan Aruch, Simon 580, Taf Kuf Pei, in number 7, brings this list down. This list that he said he'd never heard of anyone keeping. And he quotes, this is a bit of Shulchan Aruch people don't normally read. There are quite a lot of bits of Shulchan Aruch people don't normally read. But this is one that almost nobody reads. Number 7. Elo Yamim She'iru Bahem Tzorus La'Avoseinu. These following days, he writes, the days of terrible things that happened to our fathers. V'ro'i Litanus Bahem. And you should fast on them. He doesn't put in the bid Min HaTorah. He leaves that out because that's confusing. They're not really Min HaTorah. V'af Apisha Miktasam B'Rosh Chodesh. Even though some of them fall on Rosh Chodesh. Yesh Mishayinesh Yitanu Bahem. There are people who say, nevertheless, this is some kind of exception. And the Ramah brings in V'tov Shelo LaHashlim B'Rosh Chodesh. Better off not to finish the fast. Just fast till Chatzos. And that'll be okay. And then I skipped all of them apart from the ones in Tevis. Look in Bet. V'shmona b'Tevis, nichtava ha-Torah yivanes. And he fleshes it out. On the 8th of Tevis, the Torah was translated into Greek. V'yamei Talmai HaMelech, in the days of Talmai HaMelech. V'haya choshech v'oylam shalosh yamim. And the day the world was reduced to darkness for 3 days. I'm not getting into now what that means and why it was so terrible that the Torah was translated into Greek. Is that the same as the Septuagint, which is the 70 rabbis who translated the Torah into Greek? Is that the same episode? That's a whole shir in and of itself. It seems that there are at least two more, maybe more accounts of the Torah being translated into Greek. Some of them were good, some of them were bad. I'm not getting into that now. You know the whole story there where they put all the rabbis in different rooms and they all made the same emendations to the Torah and it was a nace. So the truth is, it's a nace. That's a nace. If you put 70 rabbis in the same room and they all agree on the same emendation of the Torah, now that's a nace, okay? But in different rooms, I'm not sure it's such a nace. Okay, fine. So on the 9th of Tevis, Ubetesboi, on the 9th of Tevis, he brings down this lashon. Loi noida eza hi hatsara she'irubai. We just don't know what was the thing that happened on the 9th of Tevis, and therefore we don't know why we have to fast, but he brings it in Shulchan Aruch. Now, of course, he's laid down the gauntlet and challenged everybody to try and work out what is it, indeed, that happened on the 9th of Tevis. Why is it that there's a fast that we don't know the reason for? So various different reasons have been given by the classic Mephoroshim over the last 1,000 years. Don't forget, this list came out in the 8th century. So people have been scratching their heads since the 8th century. What is on the 9th of Tevis? So here's an interesting suggestion. Look at number 8. In the Sefer Kabbalah of the Ravid, this is the first Ravid, who is not the Ravid that comments on the Rambam. That Ravid lived in Provence. This Ravid lived in Spain, and he lived in Spain at the beginning of the 12th century. He writes as follows. Shmuel HaNagid. People have heard of Shmuel HaNagid. He was Jewish, obviously. He was pretty much the prime minister of Spain in the late Gaonic period. A very important person, beginning of the Golden Age of Spain. He had a son called Yosef HaNagid, who is less well known, and who was assassinated in a political coup. Okay, number 8. The Amad al-Kanoi Rav Yosef HaLevi HaNagid Bono. So the Ravid is going through the history of the Jews, and he said after Shmuel HaNagid came his son Yosef HaNagid. And of all the wonderful qualities that his father, Shmuel HaNagid, had, Yosef HaNagid, the son, lacked only one. Shaloi haya anvanato ka'avid. His anava, his modest, his humility was not like that of his father. Why? Because he grew up in the palace. He was a rich kid. Shaloi nasa oil binura. And he didn't carry a burden. He had an easy childhood. Easy childhood leads to difficult adulthood. Okay? The Gabal Liboy, and his heart was arrogant. Adla Hashchis, Yiknu Bo Sarne Plishtim, and Sarne Plishtim obviously is a euphemism, if you like, for the people who were jealous of him. The Sarne Plishtim, the people at the time were jealous of him. Ad Shinarug Beyom HaShabbos, until they assassinated him on Shabbos. Betesha Betavis, on the 9th of Tevis, in Shnat. Dalad Taf Taf Chaf Nun, which is December 1065. He was assassinated on the 9th of Tevis, on Shabbos day. Umiyamei Rabbi Seinu HaKadmonim, and from the earliest time of the rabbis, Shekasvu Begilas Tanis, when they wrote this list of fasts, V'gazru Tanis B'tes Tevis, and they made a fast on the 9th of Tevis, V'lo Yadu Almahu, they didn't tell us what it was for, Mikan Yadanu Shekivnu Beruach HaKodesh LeYomzeh. Now we know what the 9th of Tevis was for. Back in the 8th century, the Bahag wrote this list with Ruach HaKodesh. He says that in 200 years from now, in 1065, Rav Yosef HaNagid would be assassinated on the 9th of Tevis. Interesting. Now you know why they didn't tell us what it was for. Otherwise, Yosef HaNagid would have had a difficult time reading that list, knowing that that's the day he was going to be assassinated. It's an interesting suggestion, but I'm not sure it totally solves the problem. Even if we say that the Bahag had Ruach HaKodesh, how would people have understood it up until then, etc. So that suggestion is made, but later Meforshim are not happy with it because they say, look, you know, that doesn't really answer the problem, but it's interesting and inventive. The Ramah wades in. Look in the Megillas Esther. It's only nearly Hanukkah, but Purim is not so far away, which means Pesach is not so far away either. Look at number 9. Vatilkach Esther el Hamelech Achashverosh. Esther was taken to the king Achashverosh, el Beit Malchuso, b'chodesh Asiri, in the 10th month, hu chodesh Tevet. This is the month of Tevet, b'shnat Shevel Malchuso, in the 7th year. Why do we care which month Esther was taken to the king? Whoever really paid attention to that in the Megillah, that Esther was captured in Tevet.
Why did they consider it 10 months?
Well, it's because the king sent people around to bring all the young women out. She certainly didn't go voluntarily. She had no choice. And she was taken to the king. All the young women were taken to the king, put in the harem.
But they wanted.
Okay, fine. I don't know what the women wanted, didn't want to. One thing is for sure, Chazal understood that she was ba'ones. That's how they understand that later when she went willingly to the king to try and save the Jewish people, that was when it's Baratzon, and that raises the whole question of how she could do that. Anyway, the Ramah brings down in his perish on the Megillah. The Ramah wrote a perish called Mechir Yayin on the Megillah. Why did he write this perish? Because one year at Purim there was a plague in Krakow where they were living, and they all had to run away to the countryside to escape from the plague. Much safer to be in a less built-up area when there's a plague. So he wrote to his father. He said to him, I can't send you any shlachmonis this year because we're all refugees out in the countryside. But instead of sending you shlachmonis, I've decided to write a perish. I've written a perish on the Megillah, and I'll send that to you instead of shlachmonis. That was his shlachmonis that year. He was sitting in the countryside, presumably with not much else to do. And therefore he wrote a perish on Megillah Esther, which is a beautiful perish. Look what he says in number 10. The Nakadzeh HaChodesh. Why does he bring down this month in Megillah Esther? Yoteh Nikol Chodesh HaShana. More than any other month. Liyah, because, and he links it to the Megillah's Tanishim. Baal Alokas Gedoilas, the Bahag, this is already 900 years before the Ramah, the Bahag was writing. Kasav Kol Yumi the Royal Isanus, he wrote all the days where you should fast. The Kasav Tes Tavis, and he wrote the tenth of Tavis. The Loi Kasav Al Masnim Boy, he didn't write why you have to fast. Ki Lo Kasav Rabbo Seinu Tam, because they didn't bring the reason. Lachain Ka'ama. And now we know, that's why it says, Simchas Esther, the feast that Achashverosh made when he kidnapped Esther, Haita B'chodesh Asiri, B'chodesh Tevet. That is the day that Esther was taken from the palace, from the Mordechai's home to the palace. That's the day that was the 9th of Tevet. That's why we fast on the 9th of Tevet. Well, that's also interesting, but don't forget the verse never mentioned the 9th of Tevet. Where does he know that from? It just said Tevet. Why doesn't he mention any fast day? And why was he kept a secret? If this is the reason for the fast, why would the Bahag write, we don't know the reason? Tell the reason. I understand when it comes to Yosef HaNagid, he can't tell the reason because it hasn't happened yet, and people are going to get freaked out by the fact that he's predicting the future. But here, like, tell the reason. Just say, this is the day that Esther was captured, and that we fast on that day. So other people don't like that either. One other suggestion, there are many, many suggestions, the Taz brings down in number 11 on that particular Shulchan Aruch, Tema Gedoyla. This is very surprising. Ha'itzi b'slichos, don't we write it, read in the slichos, shall yud b'tevis, of the 10th of Tevis, the b'tesbo, that on the 9th of Tevis, mates Ezra HaSofer. Ezra HaSofer died. But Tzorich Ian Rav, why doesn't anyone know this? Everybody knows that on the 9th of Tevis was the day that Ezra HaSofer died, and therefore, of course, we know why we fast on the 9th of Tevis. It's because of Ezra HaSofer. He says, I don't understand what all the fuss is about. The problem is, the Taz's answer is also not so straightforward, because if you look at the original list in the Bahag, not the one that's brought in the Torah, but the original list, it writes in number 12, the Tesboy on the 9th of Tevis, Loi Kasvu Rabosenu Al Mahu, we don't know why we're fasting, and also Ubo Bayom, on that very day, Mace Ezra HaKohen V'Nechemya Ben Chikli. So both of these things happen. Now, yes, sure, the 9th of Tevis is a fast, it seems, because Ezra HaKohen died on that day, but there's also another reason, he says, which has nothing to do with Ezra HaKohen, which is a reason that the rabbis didn't tell us. So everybody basically came up, scratching their heads, working out what is this 9th of Tevet, and why is this a fast day? So, in the 19th century, there was a new suggestion made. This suggestion was made by the early founders of a movement which became known as Wissenschaft, Des Judentums, which was a more academic approach to understanding Judaism. This span off into non-religious academic pursuits, and also with Rav Dov Tzvi Hoffman into more religious understandings of Jewish understandings of the Torah, understandings of Wissenschaft des Judentums. But there were a group of scholars in the mid-19th century, Leopold Zuntz, Solomon Rappaport, Nechemya Bruhl, and others, who came up with a new suggestion. Why did they come up with this suggestion? Because there was a book written in the 1100s, called the Sefer HaIbur. It was written by a lesser-known Rav called Rav Avram Ben Chia, Avram Bar Chia, and he wrote this book called Sefer HaIbur. It was written in 1122, but it wasn't published until the 1800s. It was only published in 1851. So we only found out about that book. It was in a manuscript until then, but it was only published in the 19th century. So they said, oh, look at this book and look what he writes. He writes there that the 9th of Tevis was the day on which Jesus was born. Now, let's get into a discussion of that right now, as to why that is the case. I brought you in the bottom, by the way, a discussion halakhically, whether it's permitted to say Jesus and Mary, etc., or whether that's halakhically prohibited. I brought you here a tshuva of the Chavos Yair, a reference at the bottom, where he basically says, since these are names of people today, there are people, many people called Mary, there are many people called Jesus. I had a client called Jesus when I was a lawyer. Jesus is a very common name in Latin America. And therefore, Rav Yair Bachrach brings down to say that these are not actually the names specifically of Avodah Zorah, and therefore it's mutter to say them. Many people don't say them. You can look in that tshuva when you have the time. But basically, Rav Avram Bar Chia says this is the day. He's done the calculations. The Sefer HaIbur was a book about the Jewish calendar. It was the first book in detail specifically about the Jewish calendar. He said, I've gone back through the months, and I've worked out that since Jesus was born on the 25th of December, we'll get to that in a minute, that date turned out in the year 1 BCE, that turned out to be the 9th of Tevis. Look at what he writes. Number 13. Nulad Hanotri. The Notri was born. Vehu nolad ledivreihem. He, according to them, was born v'shnat gimel alafim in the year 3000 taf shin samach alaf 3761 lebriyat haolam of the creation ve'esrim v'chamisha yamin v'chodesh dekabar, okay, which is December, on the 25th of December, for who Yom Shabbos, this day was a Shabbos day, Yom Teisha B'Tevis, it was the ninth of Tevis. Fine. Now, by the way, how do we know that Jesus was born on the 25th of December? The answer is, we don't. There is no serious Christian scholar, theologian anywhere that believes that Jesus was born on the 25th of December. In fact, nothing in the New Testament even discusses the date on which he was born. No one even cared about the date he was born. They were much more interested theologically in Easter than they were in the birth. And therefore, until the 2nd, 3rd century, no one even raised the topic in Christian circles. When they did raise the topic, I've given you some notes down at the bottom. There were many dates which were suggested in the 4th century. One of them was March the 28th, September the 11th, November the 18th. Okay. Eventually, the two dates that became most popular were December 25th and January 6th. And as you know, December 26th is celebrated in the Western Church, Catholic Church, and January 6th is celebrated in the Eastern Church. The truth is that it doesn't make any sense at all that even according to the story itself, on a kind of quote-unquote chat level, that Jesus was born in December because shepherds are watching their flocks, etc., etc. Nobody's watching any flocks right now anywhere near Bethlehem. The whole thing doesn't really hang together. The chances are actually that reference, and if you remember the Christmas carol, you can sing it in your head, but not out loud, please. When shepherds watch their flocks by night is almost certainly a reference to Migdal Eder, the shepherd's watchtower. Migdal Eder is in Tanakh, okay? It's in two weeks ago, Parsha, where Yaakov, Migdal Eder, actually last week's Parsha, Migdal Eder is the place where Reuven does whatever he does with Bilhah, okay, which I'm not getting into now. And if you look in the Targum Yonason, which I've brought you in the footnotes on Migdal Eder says the Targum Yonason is the place where Mashiach will reveal himself. Okay? Now, that almost certainly was picked up by the Christians and adapted into the shepherds and the watchtower and all of that kind of stuff. So, but nothing really hangs together with December at all. But he says, that's what they say, and that's what the date was. Second line, number 13 again. And it is only appropriate that this date should have been the date that this evil person was born, he says. Im divreihem emet, if that's even true in the first place. Aval ein adam ma'amin ledivreihem, but no one really believes that this is the correct date. Ha'omrim al leidot hatalui, okay, the day that this, the one who was hanged, later on we'll talk about that, was born. Shehem yadu yom shehaya b'chafte b'tzeh, we don't really believe that. Hidava hazeh einu katuv lahem be'evangelion. It's not written in the, Evangelion is the New Testament. It's not even written there, says Rav Avram Barachia. The Lord of Kisvei Talmidi Hamach is, it's not written in any of the Gospels of the one who angered us, that's talking about Jesus. Asher hei ma'amini b'hem, which they believe in. Aval hayom hazeh shehu chafchet min December, hayom kalon le'umot hakadmoni, but this day was the day, this day in December was a special day to the Romans. By the way, the Romans, the end of Saturnalia, was celebrated as the day of Sol Invictus in the pagan world, which is the birth of the unconquerable sun, S-U-N. That was the Yom HaMolad. The Yom HaMolad for the pagans was the rebirth of the sun after the winter solstice. So says the Sefer HaIbur, they just took that and turned that into the Yom HaMolad, the birth of the unconquerable sun, S-O-N instead of the sun, S-U-N, and lo and behold, that's what you get, he says. Hayom kalonu umas hakadmoni, obisalilim, v'hay hakadmoni kastim kruim lo molad hashana. And the pagans used to call this molad hashana, the birth of the sun. V'achenim hayi kurim lehem molad hachama, or the birth of the year, the birth of the sun. V'hay hayom matchil laharich v'halayla kater. This is the day that the light begins to grow and the night begins to get shorter, like we said at the beginning, from the Gemara there, Avodah Zarah. V'tzemach ha'adama v'hadesha v'hazera matchil liknot koach. The plants begin to get a little bit more, 1 second, koach. V'tzeid mitakat ha'aretz v'ligdol l'pet. V'hayu mash'ilim oto l'molad hazman l'korim lo molad hachadash. Lashnat Molad Hama. And they took that day and they made it into the pagan festival. And when the early Christians came along, Litanos etaumos, etaumos, and they wanted to fool people, ha'ele, the pagans. Lachnitsam, b'maot, hava, amsu, echad, itam, they took one of their festivals, l'chabed hayom hazet, to make this a special day, asher hayu mechubad be'ineihem, because this day was already a special day with the pagans. V'amru, and they said, loy hayo izim akalon gadol, don't make this into a bad day, elamipnei sheha pafsul hazet hayu ra'ui v'aledba, because this day, this is the day, actually, that was a good day, this is the day they said that the pasul, which is a reference to Jesus, was born. And this day that used to be a special day for the pagans turned into kalon la ovdei hapsilim upsulim. This day, which is referring to the Christians, became a Christian holiday. The gilgalo ato, and they just rolled it over. Mituma lutuma umipesha lepesha, from one tuma to another tuma, and from one criminal act to another one. He says that's it. And by the way, this is a quite popular thesis these days as well, that Christmas was just a gilgul of the ancient pagan festivals. I brought you also somewhere on the sheet a reference to a fascinating shir by Rabbi Lawrence Kellerman, where he goes through an account of Christmas and how it started, and he talks about these things as well. So, the Sefer Ibur apparently has solved our problem, or has he? He told us that this was the day on which Jesus was born, and therefore this was decreed as a fast day because it was a terrible day for the Jewish people. But, in the same breath, he told us that no one really believes them because they don't really believe this either, and therefore December 25th is probably irrelevant. Yes, sir?
The contrast about the date is one thing, but I think you named the year.
Yes, that's another thing. Christian scholars do not believe that Jesus was born in the year 1 BCE at all. This was a mistake that crept into the Christian calendar in the 6th century. I brought the reference in the sheet there as to why that crept in. Most Christian scholars say it was 3 BCE, and nobody says it was the 3rd, 25th of December, and therefore, really, the whole thesis starts to kind of unravel a little bit. And even the Sefer Ibur felt it was weak, but it's interesting, it is brought down by other people. Look on number 14. There's a Sefer called Tosfos Chadashim, by a very important Rav in the 1800s, called Rav Yehuda Leib ben Menachem of Korachin, and he brings in number 14 there, Shamati, I heard, v'shem Godel, in the name of an important person, the Godel Echad, da'az noilad oisa ha'ish. So that was the day on the 9th of Tevis that man was born. Which is fascinating, because he wrote this at the beginning of the 1800s, before the Sefer Ibur was printed. So maybe there was a Masorah going around anyway that he was aware of, and before any of these scholars that I mentioned were really active, he brings that down. However, Rav Schneer Lyman brings our attention to something which actually is much more fascinating. And he gives another suggestion. Look in number 15 and 16. Two great Gedolim from the 19th century give another suggestion. The first is Rav Baruch Frankel Ta'umim, who wrote the Sefer Baruch Tam in the 1800s. In number 15 he says the following, Umatsasi b'ksav yad, I found a manuscript, he says, Shetes Tevis, that on the 9th of Tevis, Nifta Shimon Hakalpus. Shimon Hakalpus died on that day. Shehoshia et Yisrael, and he was a great man, he saved the Jews. Mitzara Gedola, from a great trouble. Bizman ha-pritzim, in the days of those who were pritzim, which is a reference to the early Christians. Nikva yom misaso letanit olam b'Yerushalayim. And in Jerusalem, they declared that this date, the 9th of Tevis, where Shimon Kalpus died, would be a fast forever for the Jewish people, but they didn't want to write all the details in, so they said, we're not going to tell you why. Who's heard of Shimon Kalpus, other than people who have listened to and read Rabbi Lyman's material? Okay, another witness comes along, Rav Aaron Worms, also an important Rav, chief rabbi of Metz, successor of the Shagas Aryeh in the 19th century, number 16, Tanis Tes Tevis, the 9th of Tevis, this fast, the Sefer Zichronot, in an old book of Zichronot, some chronology that he had, Ra'iti, I saw this was the death of Apatirab, Shimon Hakalponi. Not quite the same word as Kalpus, but clearly the same person. Shimon HaKalponi died. Shehishlim leYudim veHeilimu mitnehem. Okay, he saved the Jews, but it was hidden from them. UbeMegillat Tanis, and in Megillat Tanis, this list of fasts, Nachat haloshen. Therefore, he uses the words loy kasu rabasenu alma mashmahachi, and he's talking about this again. Shimon Kalponi. Who was Shimon Kalponi? And why is it kept a secret? And what did he do for the Jewish people that these two gedolim are telling us about? So somebody last week, it was a gentleman over here, made a reference to Toldos Yeshu. What is Toldos Yeshu? Toldos Yeshu is a book of midrashic accounts from a Jewish perspective of the life of Jesus and his birth and his ministry and his death. It's not clear exactly when Toldos Yeshu was written. It's not from Chazal, but it's from shortly after Chazal, sometime between the 4th and the 8th century. So it's old. It comes from the same time as the Bahag, maybe even earlier than the Bahag. And it was quoted over the last 1,000 years by the church against us. They often made reference to it because it's very unflattering about Jesus and the birth of Christianity. And therefore, Toldos Yeshu was a book which was going around. You can find, I brought you in the notes online, there is a version of it available, you can download, and there's also a new critical edition of Toldos Yeshu, which I found on Amazon, which was about $800. So I didn't buy it, much to the relief of my wife, who probably thought I would have been tempted, but I actually wasn't tempted because it was just too much money. But it would have been very interesting, maybe you can get it out of the library or something. But I brought you here an extract from an English translation of Toldos Yeshu. I can't guarantee the translation exactly because it was from a website that I don't know exactly where they're coming from. But have a look at what it says in number 17. The sages desired to separate, and I've seen this quote brought down by other people as well, Rabbi Riskin talks about it. The sages desired to separate from Israel those who continued to claim Yeshu as the Messiah. Meaning what was happening. Early Christianity, all the early Christians were Jews. And therefore, in your shul, there were people, secret messianic Jews, who, although they looked and kept mitzvahs and davened and lived like all the other Jews, secretly they believed in Jesus as the Messiah. A precursor of a Sabbatean times later with Shabbatai Tzvi. And you don't know who these people are because they don't tell you who they are. And in about an hour from now, I'm giving a shir in the Bet Knesset and Nasi, Bezat Hashem, on Rabbi Yonatan Eibeschitz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And all the issues that went on as to whether he was or he wasn't a Sabbatean. We had this issue with the early Christians. So the Jews said, we have to find a way of separating Christianity from Judaism. So look at what it says in Toldos Yeshu. They called upon a greatly learned man, Shimon Kefa, which we'll see later in other versions is referred to as Shimon HaKalponi, for help. Shimon went to Antioch, which is in Syria, main city of the Nazarenes, and proclaimed to them, I am a disciple of Yeshu. He has sent me to show you the way. I will give you a sign, as Yeshu has done. Shimon then added that Yeshu desired that they separate themselves from the Jews and no longer follow their practices. As Isaiah had said, your new moons and your feasts, my soul, abhorreth. Meaning he basically turns round to the Christians and says, Jesus doesn't want you to be Jewish anymore. He wants you to be non-Jewish and keep Christianity as non-Jews and not as Jews. Stop keeping mitzvahs, said Shimon. They were now to observe the first day of the week instead of the seventh. They keep Sunday, not Shabbat. The resurrection instead of Passover, the ascension instead of Shavuos, the finding of the cross instead of Rosh Hashanah, and the feast of the circumcision instead of the Day of Atonement, the new year instead of Hanukkah. He said to them, stop all these mitzvahs, become non-Jews. They were to be indifferent with regard to circumcision, stop doing bris milah, and the dietary law, stop keeping kosher. Also they were to follow the teaching of turning to the right, and smith on the left, turn the other cheek, which is not what it says in the Torah, and the meek acceptance of suffering, all of these new audiences which Shimon, Kepha, or Paul, as he was known to the Nazarenes, taught them, were really meant to separate these Nazarenes from the people of Israel and bring the internal strife to an end. According to Toldos Yeshu, Shimon HaKalponi was a plant. It was a Jewish insider who was put into the Christian church. And by the way, there was a man called Shimon ben Kalponi who was a Jewish Christian leader and Bishop of Jerusalem. Everybody agrees on this. The Christian accounts of this are also there, that at the end of the first century CE, there was this man called Shimon HaKalponi. According to Toldos Yeshu, he was a plump. We put him in there to try and persuade the Christians to stop keeping Torah and mitzvahs and start being non-Jews, and then they'll be separated from the Jewish people. In fact, in one of the editions of Toldos Yeshu, it explicitly says, number 18, V'yamut Shimon HaKalponi, Shimon HaKalponi died, it says in Toldos Yeshu, V'yit Ablu B'nei Yisrael et Shimon, and the Jewish people who knew who he really was, it's like a pre-runner of Eli Cohen, the spy, in Syria, like we knew who he was, but as far as they were concerned, he was one of the chief military men of Syria. This day that the Shimon died, the Kavu Yomi Sasol says this version of Toldos Yeshu, his day his yahrzeit was fixed, the hisan is because Shana Vashana, for who test Yomim the Yerech Tavis. So it seems, according to this, that the mystery has been solved. That Shimon Kalponi, actually, he was the one that died on the 9th of Tavis, so says Toldos Yeshu, and therefore this is why the Bahag, when he lists the fast, only a couple of hundred years after. Now, we don't know exactly when this version of Toldos Yeshu was produced. That's a whole discussion. You can speak to Rabbi Lyman and read his material on that. But nevertheless, it seems that there is a connection between them. Look in number 19 from that same version of Toldos Yeshu and see what he says. It says, Shimon resided in the Tower of Rome. He found his way into the Vatican, where he ordained and codified the Christian laws and customs, as he was commanded to do so by the king and the sages. Okay. He transformed the alphabet, giving the letters new names, therefore intimating to those who were under secret that he ordained what he ordained was false. This was the alphabet A, B, C, D, E, F. He also composed for them books of lies, he says, which he called the Avon Kilayon, but they thought he said Evangelium. Shimon also authored books in the name of Jesus' disciples, including John, claiming that Jesus had provided them with all of the material. So according to this version of Toldos Yeshu, it's pretty clear that this insider was doing quite a lot of very important work that the Christians were unaware of. Now, what does that solve? So remember Rashi, when he said at the beginning that the Gemara says that the Edom, Rome, they don't have their own language, they don't have their own scripts, and Rashi says, and they don't even have their own books. Somebody else, says Rashi, look in our Gemara, somebody else wrote all their books. And we don't know what Rashi's talking about. Somebody else wrote all their books. First of all, why is he mentioning this on the Gemara? And what does he mean? There's loads of Roman books. That Rashi was censored. That is not the original Rashi, the one you read in the Gemara. The original Rashi read like this in number 20. And we have this in Dukei Sofrem, where Rashi's original words are recorded. She brings down Rashi, Dibur, Amaskar, Kosa, Veloshin. Acherim tiknu lahem kol sifrei ta'utam. Other people wrote all the books that steered them off. And he gives names. Yochanan, John, Paulus, Paul, Petrus, Peter. Behema yudim ayu, and they were all Jews, he says. Velashon, what does it mean, their language? Hu grammatica, this is their grammar. Vehu aloshin shemadabrim bo hagalachim. And this is the Latin, he says, that priests picked up. This was all created by them. V'heim shanu v'namku alashon v'asu lehem hevel. Okay, they turned all this nonsense to them. L'chashbem b'fnei atzmam l'sal kam mi'al Yisrael. The Rashi quotes basically the same idea, that the whole thing was done to push them away from the Jewish people. V'loi shikafru. It's not that they were heretics, these people, these Jews on the inside. They were doing it for the Jewish people, all these early Christian books. Yisrael, but tsar, for the Jewish people were in such trouble. Okay, because of the teachings of Yeshu, asu atman keilu heim imo. These Jews were basically behaved as if they were with them. The kadishut in their saints, etc. But Sibu Alaydim Akol, and they created everything for the early Christians. Ukabafurish Basefa Tliat Yeshu. And he quotes what later became known as Toldos Yeshu, which Rashi refers to as Tliat Yeshu, which is the hanging of Yeshu. But Rashi in the original version, this is what he writes. So when he says that they didn't write their own books, he is bringing down exactly the same Maisa that is brought in Toldos Yeshu, except that Rashi was clearly censored. Yes. Correct, he's not talking about the Romans. Now we know what Rashi is talking about. It's nothing to do with Virgil and Pliny. It's nothing to do with that at all. He's saying the exact same thing, that the early books of Christianity were, it was basically an international Jewish conspiracy. Yeah. So that's a good question. That, Rashi's not mentioning that, but that's what Toldos Yeshu says, and I don't know how that fits, because the Latin alphabet, you know, if you're an academic scholar, you work out where the Latin alphabet comes from. I'm sure it doesn't come from post-Christianity. I'm sure they had a Latin alphabet before Christianity. So that needs a little bit of research as to how that works, but it's fascinating that that's the original Rashi. How does that bring us, where does that bring us to? That brings us to the following. We obviously have Tes Tevis. Now we know a little bit what the ninth of Tevis is. Still, I don't think anyone's going to fast on the ninth of Tevet, but we have a little bit more idea what the ninth of Tevet really is. And it all links together with this conversion, this transfer of the early pagan festivals into what became a Christian time. And their early works, apparently, according to this anyway, were influenced to some degree, maybe to a significant degree, by our own people. Of course, I'm sure the Christians would write this off as total nonsense, but I'm interested in what Rashi has to say, and that apparently is what he has to say. I brought you just in the last few minutes some interesting ideas, a very famous picture, of course, which is of the Leila Babish Rebbe on Mittelnach playing chess with his father-in-law, the Friedrich Rebbe, and if you go... The Lubavitcher Rebbe is on the right as a young man, and his father-in-law, the Friedrich Rebbe, which was the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, they're playing chess. It's a very famous picture. Chabad Minag is to play chess on the 25th of December in the evening. You can go online, you can get a YouTube video of 770, all engrossed in their chess games on the night of 25th of December. And as I'm sure people are aware, there is a custom that has grown up not to learn Torah on Mittelnacht. Where does that custom come from? So it dates back to the Rishonim. It's certainly not mentioned in the Gemara or Chazal. The Lubavitcher Rebbe explains, which is the classic explanation, so as to not give any chus to Yeshu on that night, because of course Yeshu was Jewish, presumably learning Torah would have some kind of connection, and therefore he says that if you're living in the Eastern Church lands, then you have to keep Mittelnacht and have your chess on the 6th of January, not the 25th, whichever day they say is their date. Other people give different reasons. The Tamei Amin Hagim, which is a famous sefer written about 100 or so years ago, about different reasons for Minhagim, brings down that, of course, it was just a physical thing. The Jews were a fair game. People, just like Saturnalia was a festival to attack the Jews, and you can listen to the various different things I brought you in the notes to see that. So too, Christmas was a very dangerous time. The Jews couldn't be outside. Even if they had a light, a candle burning inside, they'd be attacked by pogroms. And so basically what they did is they just shut the lights down and they just lay low for till midnight, until the Jews had come out, until the non-Jews had come back from midnight mass. Yes?
You know, the gates of Yeshiva, the boys used to cut up toilet paper, newspaper, for the whole year of the Shabbos.
On Mittelnacht. My goodness me. What you learn here in this forum. She said that in Gateshead Yeshiva, the Bochrim used to cut up the bathroom, the toilet paper, for the whole year on Mittelnacht. That's interesting, because traditionally the Lithuanians did not accept this minhag at all. The Vilna Gaon was against the minhag, and it wasn't a minhag in Litha whatsoever, and of course it wasn't a minhag in any of the Sephardi communities, because it's what they got to do with Mittelnacht, and as such it wasn't really accepted in Eretz Yisrael. The Chazon Ish learnt on Mittelnacht. He said he didn't accept the custom. The Stipler would learn Baal Peh on Mittelnacht, because he didn't want to learn how like it was going to upset people, but he actually asked people, please don't tell me which is the 25th of December, and then I won't know which it is anyway, and therefore if I do learn it won't be, you know, amazing, because why would he know what the 25th of December is? And the Chasam Sofer brings it down, a reason, and he says we don't want the Jews to be sleeping when the non-Jews are zealously attending midnight mass. So actually he brings down the opposite. He said the Jews used to go to bed early on the night of 25th December so they could dafka get up at Chatzos to learn Torah. And therefore he says, because we don't want the non-Jews all in midnight mass when the Jews are all sleeping in bed, therefore dafka he wants them to learn on Mittelnacht because it'll be a schus for the Jews, etc. So you see all sorts of different reasons brought down there for Mittelnacht, and you can do further research. I think this is a somewhat of an unusual topic, fascinating topic, and we see that this time of year there are lots of connections in different ways. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will leave this aside and we will go into Hanukkah, more traditional Torah, and we will look at issues to do with electricity and candles and Hanukkah and Shabbos and Havdalah and such like, which is a fascinating halachic subject.